There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, Lord, get you a ripe one. Don't get a hard one. You can plant them in the spring and eat them in the summer. A winter without them is a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out to pick me a big one, it's homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be?
Welcome to the Edible Community Show in the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Deborah Shapiro, publisher of Edible Green Mountains, and I alternate this seat with my colleagues, Kate Manchester, publisher of Edible Santa Fe, and Marla Camp, publisher of Edible Austin. Every Monday, thanks to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, we bring you community-based, locally-oriented stories about the farmers, growers, chefs, community members, and food artisans that create the distinct culinary regions we all enjoy throughout the United States and Canada. And every season, we do the same through the pages of our Edible Communities publications, and you can find all of those at ediblecommunities.com. I really hope you'll be able to stay with us through this hour. If you do, I promise you'll find yourself feeling optimistic, grateful, and inspired. I know that's a lot to promise, but when you hear about what my guests are doing to advance the mission of school and community-based initiatives related to food and the environment, I'm confident that you'll agree this is a vision of a future we can all support. The organization they represent is called Common Roots, and the origin of the name comes from the belief that humankind is nothing without the earth, and the earth and the soul are our common roots. And although we'll be speaking specifically about an initiative in Chittenden County here in Vermont, the ideas and opportunities we'll be discussing are relevant everywhere. The question they're striving to address is, how does community come together to create an educational system that is connected to the food system? And I think they've really got some answers. Their mission is to connect farmers, educators, youth, and community members to build a sustainable future through place-based educational and service programs. And in their mission, they speak about collectively growing food for our schools, kitchens, and food shelves, and celebrating the soil and soul of community. Their stewardship will provide food security, confirm our local environment, and nurture our common roots. So today, I'm thrilled to have with me Carol McQuillan. She's the founding chair of the organization and a kindergarten and first grade teacher, and her colleague Linda Waltine, an innovative and enthusiastic educator who's developed a variety of activities in and out of the classroom that link her students' learning to the land. So wherever you live, this show is going to be relevant to you and to your environment. Let's take a short break, and we'll come back with Carol.
When I first met you, baby, you fed me on chicken and wine. Steak and potatoes and lobster, baby, I sure felt fine. Now all you feed me is seaweed and alfalfa sprouts and sunflower seeds, and I've got my doubts, 'cause babe, you left me here with a chicken cold on
blue. Welcome back to the Edible Community Show. We're on the Heritage Radio Network, and I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor today, Hearst Ranch, as well as our host for today's show, wonderful Merrill Lynch on the shores of Lake Champlain here in Burlington, Vermont. So welcome back. I'm here with my guest, Carol McQuillan. She's the chair of Common Roots and an educator who has experienced firsthand the value of bringing farm to school. And Carol hopefully is going to help us set up the context for this wonderful initiative. Carol, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks,
great.
Deborah.
Welcome. So how does something this big get started? Tell us a little bit about where this whole notion of Common Roots came from.
Well, perhaps the very first inspiration was the fact that my grandparents on both sides of my family were farmers, and I have experienced the family farm and the benefit of my aunts and uncles making really humongous gardens for us to pick as nieces and nephews and do some canning down the road for the winters, as I'm one of nine children. But being an educator for more than 30 years now and working with children in different capacities, I've seen what I would call a decline in the quality of food that our children are eating, at least from what I can see at the school level, which is their primarily their lunches. And a group of us were beginning to think about it as we have a number of small gardens at Orchard School in South Burlington that was inspired by an individual in our community who started growing with teachers these little gardens around our school place. And by the time I came to Orchard School, there were some talented teachers already gardening and connecting curriculum with the gardens in our landscape. At the same time, which was about 2 days before 9/11, I was further inspired by the work of Shelburne Farms, as they had brought about 2,000 people together to look at the Earth Charter with Stephen Rockefeller. And at this day-long event, there were people from every sector of our community at Shelburne Farms, and there were tree dancers from New York City. Paul Winter in concert was there, Jane Goodall. And as Stephen Rockefeller spoke about the Earth Charter and stewardship for a more sustainable future, there were many aspects of the day that inspired me. For example, there were children from area schools with three-dimensional masks of animals from every continent and ocean around our world. There were beautiful singers from the Children's Essex Choir. But the moment of what I would call my personal inspiration and turning point was after lunch with Jane Goodall and other high schoolers having conversation with her, the beautiful challenge that Satish Kumar from India spoke about so passionately and simply. And what Satish Kumar had to say is that while Americans are focused on their body, mind, and spirit, which is well and good, that he wanted to gently stretch Americans and perhaps citizens of the world to consider that the reason we care for our body, mind, and spirit is in order to care for the soil, the soul, and society. And there was a little turning point inside of me upon reflecting his message of soil and soul, in understanding within the circle of my colleagues that food was an issue and how we're feeding children at our local school continues to be an issue. It's a lot of corn-based food. Much of it is frozen and warmed up and served without much of the plant world evident. And simultaneous to that, a very talented filmmaker and his son, Ben and Tim Kahn from Shelburne, Vermont. Ben is a Middlebury graduate and a filmmaker. And it's the Last Link film is a very powerful story of the challenge of shepherds actually coming from the Pyrenees of France to the Americas and the challenge of making a living at sheep farming. But we're left with a really poignant question at the end of this film, which was beautifully narrated by Willie Nelson. And Ben wrote as a 25-year-old filmmaker, what stand will we be willing to take for our future to preserve the roots of our past? And again, I was sort of wowed with another inspiration. And from the work of Shelburne Farms and the Last Link film came forth a small group of parents and teachers who began wrestling with the issues of sustainability. And from that little bit of a conversation and wrestling with what are we going to do, we began a committee at Orchard School for Sustainable Living. And from that committee, our second and third grade teachers brought forth a plan to teach more about composting and how composting brings back the nutrients to the soil and brings back food for our tables.
And could I just ask, second and third grade, that seems sort of young. I mean, how did they decide that was the place to begin?
Well, that's where our teachers actually have the soil cycle within their curriculum. Linda, my friend here, will tell us more about that in just a minute. And it's also where there were teachers willing to really take sustainability to the next step at our school. So this Sustainable Living Committee did some of the background work. We had an intern from the University of Vermont supporting them, along with the talent of Mike Kellogg, who was then at Chittenden Solid Waste, who now is a very competent teacher at our local school in Williston. And they were the sort of the backdrop of helping to support teachers in moving compost forward. So we had then this moving forward of composting, and simultaneously more and more issues at our Sustainable Living Committee level about what are we going to be doing about improving local school food. From that, we began getting more and more talented teachers and parents coming to the table with more and more passion.
And could I interrupt and just ask, so what is it looking like in the school at that moment when you're talking about, I mean, I think we all have some sense of what might be on the lunch plate, macaroni or whatever's coming.
Corn dogs.
Because I think for something like this to happen, you really do need the power of all these forces coming together. Mm-hmm. So if you could give us a little insight into what were the kids eating, what were they coming home and talking about, how were parents gearing up for this?
Well, the way they would have come home and done more chatting is that some teachers did what we call taste testing recipes. And so they were looking at, well, how could we develop an interesting muffin that was nutritious, doable for the food service system, and an enhancement to our school menu? So there was some food tasting going on at our local school, as well as then bridged by a talented parent from our committee to our middle school. The challenge has been sustaining that momentum. And so the only thing that we can articulate to date within our Sustainable Living Committee that has made a difference in our menu is that we now have salad bars at our local elementary schools. They had already been at our middle and high school. And then as of this year, changing the quality of bread on our menu. All that being said, we still have a ways to go. And so we have within our committee from Sustainable Living Initiatives, we have been more tenacious right now in saying to ourselves, we need to be able to educate about local food and influence our food systems within area schools. And the way we want to bring forth that mission and vision is, in fact, purchasing a local farm. Common Roots has been in conversation with the Vermont Land Trust now for over a year. They know about our tenacious mission and vision with Common Roots. The farm at the LeDuc family site on Cheese Factory Road, both in Shelburne and South Burlington, we are hoping will be the first site of Common Roots, but Common Roots as a nonprofit is not limited to the LeDuc farm. So if we're successful in September to purchase the LeDuc farm, it will be the first site where we bring forth a mission of what is a new term, SSA, school-supported agriculture, along with a typical CSA, which many people around Vermont in our nation know about. A CSA is community-supported agriculture. And then we would be adding to that mission for the educational purpose of the farm mission, place-based educational programs.
So one of the motivations, it's interesting to me, really is wanting to put better food in the mouths of these children and saying, we can't rely on anyone else to do this anymore. We're going to take the initiative and do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then I guess you're going yet a step further now because you're looking for community involvement. You're going to feed the community, mm-hmm. not just the students. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, you're looking to purchase this property. Mm-hmm. And why don't we take a short break, and then we're going to come back and we're going to learn a little bit more about this property and how you've gone about looking into it and how you go out and find a property mm-hmm. to serve such a broad mission. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. Bye.
Thank you.
nice way of leading it in.
Hi, we're back. This is the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to the Edible Community Show, and I'm your host, Deborah Shapiro. I want to thank our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, for making today's program possible, and our wonderful host for today's show, Merrill Lynch, on the shores of Lake Champlain. If you're just joining us, we're speaking about an innovative initiative spearheaded by a newly created nonprofit, Common Roots. It's located in Vermont, but it's a wonderful model for how communities can do this type of work around the country. And in their efforts to go beyond linking farm to school, you may have heard right before we took a break that they're working to acquire over 140 acres of farmland that will be used to feed the community's minds, bodies, and spirits. And I was really surprised to learn about how much goes into evaluating a place and its appropriateness for a different type of purpose like this, where they want it to be really viable farmland as well as a place for the community to gather and to have an educational program. So my guest, Carol McQuillan, who's the current chair of Common Roots, is going to share with us a little bit about that process and how one goes about finding a place to build this vision and this dream. Welcome back, Carol.
Thank you, Deborah. So in terms of building our capacity to look at purchasing a farm for our community school, production of food, and educational programming, the backdrop around education is that in order to engage our students, we need to help them become systems thinkers, that they know how to solve problems that are existing in our community, how they can become part of the planning and part of the communication to educate about the food changes that we will see within local school districts.
And how early can someone learn about systems thinking? How early in their education can they do that?
Well, as a kindergarten first grade teacher, I know that kids learn about systems thinking just in the basic cause and effect of when we treat each other well, we feel good about ourselves, and when we don't treat each other well, then somebody is left with a feeling that's not desirable. So it really, cause and effect is really young teaching. But in terms of educational programming, it steps into the curriculum in a variety of ways. When we look at the place of Common Roots at, hopefully, the LeDuc Farm, we're looking at programming for preschool all the way through grades 12 and involvement with our university, connected with our seniors and experts beyond the
college. So there's a place
years.
For everyone in the system.
That's
and you're looking
the community
at the big
vision.
System of the universe.
Mm-hmm. But when we think of the major programming at the farm, we would like to capture the imagination and the energy of our middle school population. That's where we will have semester and or year-long programs where they're actually learning in place. So instead of farm to school, their farm will be at the school. That doesn't preclude the access for community members at large, because down the road, let's say 3 to 5 years, if we have goats for Chèvre cheese and or milking cows for a production of mozzarella cheese, there would be access to businesses in partnership with us. So the preschoolers would come and pet the goats and maybe help to bottle feed them if that needed to happen in the spring. But the work and the integration of curriculum for those goats and the production of cheese would mostly be within a middle school population. Has that part of the farm is will all be stepped and phased in, so we're telling people who are interested in the LeDuc Farm and Common Roots mission that all of this will be very measured, stepping in phases. The farm itself has been studied by two particular graduate schools at the University of Vermont, one being the course called Place. And Walter Pullman and his about 12 graduate students have really looked at this dynamic landscape. They've looked at the prime soils, the flow of water, the ecological landscape demanding the flow of populations of animals, everything from rodents to mammals to birds, and how we would actually care for this landscape along with farming it. The power of this particular piece of land is that on the south end, which is in Shelburne, there is the most quintessential view of Shelburne Pond. And so how would we, within the recreation of our communities in South Burlington and Shelburne, give people a recreational access to the land? So we want to look at ecological restoration, building the interconnectedness of the animal-plant communities, and balancing that with access for people, both for learning, for recreation, and for study.
And that's the very top view, right, the 35,000-foot view. So mm-hmm. now if we bring it down a little closer, mm-hmm. what do we see as some of the first steps you'll be able to take? What do you imagine as some of the first cultivation of this
right.
place?
Well, the beauty of the farm is that there are 18 acres of prime soil. And so if we are able to purchase this at the end of September, in phase one, we will be turning over those 18 acres of soil and improving them with winter plantings that will improve the nitrogen.
And will this be an organic farming system?
It'll be
fully
organic.
Okay.
And we'll be looking at how we improve the waters that are flowing through the land by our practices. So we'll be very ecologically minded. In addition to that, which is very up and close, we'll be farming foods for our local schools and community on that 18 acres. We will be working with a very ambitious ecological designer, John Todd. And how will we improve the perimeter of those 18 acres? And he's proposing with us through the Rubenstein School that we would use a technology called soil sequestration. And that is, how do you build the fungus, bacteria, and vertebrates of the soil that already exist, along with animal matter and composting, to improve and double the prime soils within the first couple of years?
And do we have farms in Vermont that are doing this now? I mean, are there examples of?
Not that particular soil improvement plan. That's something kind of new on the horizon of ecological thinking.
So you'll be a little bit, all of this coming together will also be almost a laboratory place where there can be things that are tested and practiced that other people can then learn from and studied, and then it becomes exportable in a sense. So beyond our community, it goes to other communities
as well.
And I guess as I was listening to you talk about all the components of the soil that are already there, that sounded like some interesting teaching opportunities, probably.
Exactly.
There's ways that the kids can come and take soil samples.
And when we look at that middle school down the road, that middle school population that are our farmers and systems thinkers at hand, thinking within green technologies and ecological, holistic restoration and care of this land, we're looking at ways to build a partnership beyond the middle schoolers. So they'd be working with people from the university, internships with our high school, other mini courses for teachers and educators in the community at large. Teachers could come and see what our middle schoolers are doing for their subset of middle schoolers so that they'd see what other peers are doing at the LaDuke farm. It's very, very forward-thinking, and yet if we're going to prepare our children for the challenges of our future, we have to find meaningful ways to engage them in this kind of education that will prepare them and inform them about their talents and skills to really be contributors for a more sustainable future.
Well, and we're also hearing about farmers as rock stars now, right? We've gone through the chef as rock star. Now we're starting to hear about farmers as rock stars, and I think it's very impressive that at a time when we're losing a lot of farmers, the average age of the farmer in Vermont is in their 50s, that we're thinking about how are we going to replace this workforce? How are we not we're going to make this a good choice for children. It's a viable option to choose this way of life and wanting to do this in the future. And I wanted to ask you, who are you going to use as mentors from the community? Because although you're wonderful educators, a second grade teacher, and you have that great background with your large family learning how to keep a small farm, who will be the mentors to helping you learn how to farm? Are you going to partner with some existing farmers, vegetable farmers?
Or? Well, right off the bat, what we're excited about this summer is that we're already communicating with food service providers. And Common Roots will have to stage in the production of food. And we don't want school systems who are ready to produce organic local food or purchase local organic food, we don't want them to wait until our farm is up and running. So we have a current CSA with Eric Rosendahl, a graduate actually of South Burlington Schools, who owns the Rocketville Market Farm in Starksboro with his wife, Keenan. And we decided very wisely, I think, as the Board of Common Roots, that we didn't want to be building momentum to purchase the Leduc farm without local food. So this summer, for the first time, we have CSA shares of food delivered every Wednesday to our middle school, high school parking lot. And we have more than 70 members buying his organic food, cheese from Shelburne Farm, bread from Klinger's, eggs from an Underhill farmer who already comes into the Burlington area for his other job, and also chicken and pork coming off of Eric's farm, which are organically fed animals.
So you're really building the demand before you, I mean, it's brilliant of you to build the demand, and then you'll begin to fill it in with the property that you're going to have.
Right, and with Shelburne Farms being one of our inspirations, they actually have a very important person in their local food system for Burlington Schools. So Doug Davis is the director of food services, but networking within Burlington Sustainable Schools with Shelburne Farms and NOFA and Feed, which are powerful supports, they have Bobby Young. And Bobby Young's job,
I know Bobby, he's terrific.
His job is to help Doug Davis see what's going to be coming off local farms in advance so he can use that food in their school menu and or on their local salad bars.
So he's a food scout. He's kind of out there finding out what they'll have. And I do want to say for all of our listeners who may be envying us because we're in this very innovative, forward-thinking land of Vermont, this can be happening in your communities as well. So just fill in whatever names we're using and places we're referring to with the people that you know in your community that have this kind of passion. I just wanted to interject that because I keep thinking about people that I know in other areas and how I know they'd really benefit from the kind of work that's going on here. Mm-hmm. So I was interrupting. We were talking about the Food Scouts.
So the Food Scouts, so what we'd like to do with the local food service providers of public and private schools who care about feeding their children better through SSA, school-supported agriculture, we will be forming this collaborative. We're not sure what they'll call themselves, but we're already meeting and interviewing and chatting about this important vision of Common Roots for improving the food quality of how we're feeding our children, looking at the issues of obesity, the rising cost of health care. We know that children who are not eating well can often have low self-esteem and how that impacts their development, especially towards adolescence. We want to be forward-thinking and not only prevent some of that, but look at how we can support children through our food systems at school and communication through our local communities to parents.
Well, and it really speaks to the part of your mission that talks about the mind, the spirit, the whole being.
The whole being.
So why don't we take another short break, and when we come back, we'll speak with Linda Waltine as well as Carol, and we'll hear a little bit about what's going on in the schools today and some of the programs that Linda already has in place, as well as some of her plans for the future. Let's just take a short break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to our show. I'm Deborah Shapiro, publisher of Edible Green Mountains, and your host for the Edible Community Show here on the Heritage Radio Network. Thanks to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, and we're also very fortunate today to be at the Merrill Lynch offices on the shores of Lake Champlain in Burlington, Vermont. So if you're just tuning in, we're speaking about an innovative initiative that's committed to bringing new life and dimension to the concept of farm to school. You might have heard my earlier guest call it SSA, School-Supported Agriculture. Well, now we're going to speak with Linda Waltine. She's an accomplished and talented educator who has linked agriculture and food to subjects such as history, math, and language. And I really wish I would have had Linda as my teacher, because I think she would have brought a real passion to my life. So we're going to start. I'm going to start by asking you, Linda, welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for being here. What's going on in second and third grade now when you get to learn about food? We never learned about food.
Well,
when I was growing up.
Like all schools in Vermont, we follow the state standards in science and social studies, and we look closely at ways that we can integrate those standards and make a context for children. And the beauty of having a farm and even the gardens that already exist is it does provide a context for students to get out and see the place that they're living in and see the plants and animals that we're talking about.
Now, could I ask how, because I think in Vermont we know so many schools that have gardens. How long has that been going on, like a garden at a school?
Probably about 10 years.
And was that pretty innovative 10 years ago when that started?
Certainly it existed, but I think to the degree that it's been developed in the pairing with parents in the community has been inspirational.
And really. So do the parents actually come and help tend the garden?
They have, but our gardens were actually started by a parent who was volunteering in classrooms, which is really a nice way to have an initiative begin in a school.
And I think we're talking about Sabrina Joy.
We are.
Right. And anyone listening who is here in Vermont knows Sabrina Joy Milberry, who's a very, very talented, the plant lady she's known.
Exactly. She, well, her daughter was in fifth grade at the time, and she started coming in to help with science components in the classroom. But having a farm would just extend all of that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the standards, the state standards that we work on as a second and third grade teacher. Now, of course, any teacher of any grade has the ability to take the standards that they're dealing with at that age and shape them to make them work for students.
And are these comparable to other curricula? Are they similar in other parts of the country? Or
the standards that
you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
And they are throughout Vermont.
Okay. Great.
So we're looking at the Vermont framework right now. And in second grade, it's so perfect because one of the big requirements for science is for students to understand the soil and rock cycle. So to do that, they have to understand the components of soil, how soil is formed. They have to learn, the big idea is that soil changes over time. And that's a really big and powerful idea, that everything changes over time. Plants change, people change. The universe, in fact, is changing. And they know that because we also study, you know, space. So one of the fascinating things about studying soil is that you can't study soil without studying all the creatures that live in and throughout the soil. So there you already are talking about insects and the interaction between plants and animals, which comes up a lot. But during that second grade year, so if we're talking about soil, then what I would do is try to find other things in different parts of the curriculum that I need to talk about that year. And I would try to weave them together to make sense for children. So another perfect idea for us is that in social studies, in our second grade year, we're talking about a regional study of the United States. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's not the old memorizing all the capitals and all the, you know, names of the states.
Which is what we had to do.
Yeah, it's a little bit more dynamic. It's that we take a region and we try to figure out what's really special about that region. So we always start in Vermont, which is our place, and that's my favorite part, really, for kids, is to understand the place where they live. and that they're able to describe the plants and animals that are right in their own backyard. So as we take this simulated journey through the United States, if we keep that idea in our minds, it's easy to see that as we move across the prairies and we move across the Midwest and we move into the redwood forests of the Pacific, that the land changes greatly depending on the soil, and that determines what can be grown in the diversity of plants.
Now, when I think about, at my advanced stage of life, the concept of place and the challenge that I have in trying to define it, and I hear you speak about a second grader or a third grader defining place, what are some of the definitions that your students give you about place? Or how do you teach them to perceive a place?
Well, we look for what is the same and what is different in different areas. So we might start in Vermont and talk about what animals and plants live here, what are the bodies of water.
I see.
And then as we move across the country, we might look at how that changes. We might, we've focused the study in many different ways. We've done it for years, but we might look at rivers, for example, and different rivers throughout the United States. We look at
how people live. Birds. Remember, you did birds.
We did birds. We've done it from the point. That's a good point. We've done it from the point of view of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we, since it's all a simulation anyway, because we're not really traveling, we travel as an animal. In 1 year, we traveled as birds. So we studied the birds in our communities first, learned all about their properties, their characteristics, their structures, and then we pretended to fly to these different areas of the country. We've done a focus on trees, so really understanding the trees in Vermont and then going south and looking at the live oaks in the south and the cottonwoods on the plains and the redwoods and doing it that way. But the important part for students, I think, is especially now where every community that you go to has similar buildings.
Right.
Gone are the days where you can find a different store. It's almost not as exciting. When I was growing up in the 50s, you could travel to your relative's house and you would have all these different stores to shop in. And now, you know, every community has many, many similar stores.
Right.
So by going outside of that and looking at what's growing there and understanding that it really is the components of the soil that promote the growth in that area, then students can begin to understand that where they live is very different than somewhere else. We also focus a lot on food chains and how food chains always begin with plants, and that really all food can be traced back to plants. And that's sometimes surprising for children. If we look at plant parts and what are the parts that we eat, what are the parts that how do we propagate plants? And most people think only through seeds, but that's not true. We have other ways to propagate
plants. And what are some of those?
By looking at their parts, you can take a leaf cutting, you can take a stem cutting, a root, you can take roots,
the bulbs.
You can cut bulbs and, you know, split them and put them in different
parts. And so all of this is you're doing all of this.
We're doing all of this, and we're doing it in our classroom. So you might walk into our classroom, and you might see students who have set up experiments on plant growth. And so they might have a towel over a plant to block out the sunlight to see what might happen if there's not enough light. You might see a plant growing or trying to grow inside a box, so that they can be looking at the direction that a plant will take when it's trying to, you know, weave its way to the sun. You might see all different propagation methods. You might see students sorting plants, sorting seeds by characteristics. You might see them graphing plant growth, which is another
I feel like I'm hearing about a college course.
Well,
not a second or third grader. It's amazing.
Well, our standards talk a lot about inquiry. They talk a lot about representing data after you've done your investigation and observing. And that's why being out in a space like a farm would just really enlarge what we're doing, because we can take a small corner of a garden at school, and a child can closely and intensely study that small section, and they can draw it and sketch it. And we do study many wildlife sketchers, like Jim Arnosky has several books showing students how a wildlife biologist would really get up close and sketch the growth in their area. But we also need to have kids have a way to apply their results to the real world. So if we're doing all this testing and this exploring and this observing, it would be so nice to see it on a larger scale, because then they're going to really understand how that small plant that they might see in one setting, if you take several plants like that, then you really can feed a group of people.
And are they currently, are you able to grow enough that they actually eat something that they grow?
We have grow labs in our building, which we've had for a while. And through those grow labs, we started growing greens for lettuce and salad. And that was very successful. The kids harvest them. They love them. And so we are growing greens outside now, but we're also growing them inside throughout the winter. We planted, before we left school in the spring, root crops, several different kinds of potatoes. We do study South America. After we finish this regional study of the United States, we study South America. So we got South American types of potatoes. We got all the different kinds of root vegetables that we could possibly get, with the idea of learning about them, but also harvesting them for our harvest festival at school, which we do every other fall.
So, tell us a little more about that. I wasn't familiar with the harvest festival.
Well, every other year we have a harvest festival where we have several stations growing where children can do any number of things that have to do with food and plant parts that have been harvested. So we might have decorative crafts, like where they're making things with plants, making wreaths, weaving, making baskets, pressing flowers, looking at plant pigments and what you can get out of them, taking cloth and making a design with the actual pigments of the plants. But we also serve a meal at that harvest festival. And last year, we were so proud to have it be a meal that was totally grown and worked on by the kids. They prepared every step of it. They washed the potatoes. They cut the vegetables. They measured. They prepared. They served. They made the bread or the butter for the bread. And
how were they? Were you the mentor for that? Were you giving them the recipes?
Different teachers took different parts and decided what made sense in their curriculum and what they might like to do. We had a teacher who had made it the job of his classroom to kind of oversee the apple trees at our school. So they did the preparing of the apples and created recipes that used apples. We were studying South America at the time, so we did we were studying Native Americans that year, but we did some corn and potato recipes. So it just depends on how we're linking things in the curriculum. But so I talked about having 2 years. I have 2 years with my students. I have a second grade, and then I go on and take them in third grade. So in my second grade year, we're doing this regional study of the United States, which I talked about. In our third grade year, our social studies focus is Native Americans. Well, that's also perfect with our land connection, because, again, the big difference between groups of Native Americans who lived in this country were those who could grow their food and those who were hunter-gatherers. So the year that we're studying Native Americans, we grow the Three Sisters, which are corn, beans, and squash.
And they're you might want to share how they're presented in a very particular way, right? Aren't they planted in a very particular way?
Well, they're interdependent.
Interdependent, exactly.
So that the corn grows, in a vertical stalk, so the bean is a vine, and the bean would use the support of the corn to travel up. So it's heading vertically, and then the squash is planted at the root of the roots of the corn because they have a very large leaf which shades the corn. So it's a great example of practices that actually would be seen later in a farm where people rotate crops to keep the best minerals in the soil, where people think organically and think about insects and animals that might or might not, you know, eat the food and how to prevent that in a way that's not toxic and not using chemicals. So it's a great example for students to get right out into the garden. One of the things that we absolutely know about learning is that the more modalities that you can use for students, so that if I plan an activity and I plan it so that it's something that they see and they hear and they touch and they maybe even taste, they're going to retain that information so much better than if I ask them to memorize something in isolation. So one of the great, great beauties of having a place, a farm that children can go and tend the soil is that we do know that something that you make with your hands, it's actually been scientifically proven, is more powerful for kids, and it's more satisfying, and it's something that you're going to remember and get more joy out of if you're actually building it and doing it yourself. And when we see children in the gardens right now, some of the things that we're doing are tending our gardens to give a sense of stewardship, to give a sense that we all have the responsibility to keep our land beautiful, and that we can do that. We can clean those gardens and we can care for them. So that when we see children outside and we see the joy that they have in the way that they can make a difference. The thing about gardening is it's so very tangible. You see at the end of that experience what you've done. Even if you plant a seed, you don't exactly see it grow that second, but you can see in the prepared soil, and you just have this wonderful hope for the future. So for me, one of the things about having students outside and in their environment and in their habitat is that they're really getting a respect for nature that they couldn't get otherwise. They're seeing the in the land around the cultivated area of this farm, they'll see the intact habitat for wildlife. They'll see an area where birds live. They'll see what lives in the soil, the small mammals, and it's very easy to see how they're interdependent. They'll see, hopefully we'll have bees at some point, and they'll see
how all the systems work.
Exactly.
When they're out in nature and they have these hands-on experiences, they actually ask powerful questions. So what comes to me is we were raising in the K-1 monarch butterflies,
mm-hmm.
and the day we were releasing them, one of my kindergarten children, so 5 years old, said, "Mrs. McQuillan, how did that butterfly know how to fly? It took me more than a year to learn how to walk."
Oh, how incredible.
So if you look at powerful thinking, often comes with powerful questions and in tandem with powerful questions. And when you look at how Linda's describing this interactive teaching with real-life learning and investigation and recording data, you'll see it in the children's writing. They really have what I would call a grounding of stewardship. They understand that the land outside their classroom is connected with their learning, with some of the food they've tasted. And when I look at the work of Shelburne Farms, the work of Feed in the State of Vermont, Fresh Food Education Every Day, what we're learning over time is that when children learn to be stewards of the landscape and see the benefit of what comes off the land in terms of food and experiences of learning, they become invested. And we believe as educators that stewardship is critical to teach at an early age in order to really foster that lifelong habit of stewardship. So caring for the landscape as a second, third grader in Linda's classroom, putting that garden to bed at the end of its cycle, knowing that it's going to have to be prepared for the next spring, is giving them this watering of what it means to take care of their own place at Orchard School or at home or in their community. So that translates down the road.
So it's teaching values. I mean, you know, we've been talking a little bit about teaching science or social studies, mm-hmm. but then there's that whole other component of you're teaching them values, a way to behave, exactly. a way to be respectful, a way to be a good part of the community, which you've done already, but I know you're very excited about the farm, because mm-hmm. that would give you a way to do it even further.
And we haven't even talked about possibilities for art. I mean, the art that the children are doing in my classroom when they look at a pumpkin close up or they look at a flower closely or they try to model, art in the form of Georgia O'Keeffe, for example, or something, doing a very large study. So the possibilities for artwork are huge. Literature, we didn't discuss much, but if you just think about going to a local library or a bookstore and you look at the children's books that have nature as a theme and themes about plants and animals, they can be factual, they can be fanciful. There's great stories of about like the enormous turnip, where somebody tries to pull this enormous turnip out of the ground. So there's so many ways to connect the natural world.
So you might read about the turnip and
we might
plant a turnip and then go try to... There's a saying I'm reminded of, which I've seen ascribed to both the Italian culture, the Chinese culture, which is, tell me and I'll forget,
mm-hmm. oh, yeah.
show me and I may remember,
right.
involve me and I'll understand. And I think what you're doing through Common Roots is really providing a way for every level of our community to get involved. The teaching sounds really inspired and exciting. We're getting close to the end of the show, and I want to invite both of you if you have any other things you want to share. Linda, was there anything else you wanted to tell us about your plans for the classroom or an anecdote that you wanted to share?
I have something I'd like Linda to articulate, because at the end of her theme, she has a parent share, and because the kids have done so many hands-on things and it's reflected in their writing, talk about the enthusiasm when the kids get to talk about, which is a high-level skill, to learn something is one thing, but then to be able to communicate it.
Yeah.
So maybe you tell about the power of the children sharing their excitement in your units of study. Well, what we do is we save all their work for several weeks until we really come to the conclusion of a large, large unit of study. And so we make a list of all the things that students and parents will see in the classroom, and the child has a clipboard, and they go around, and several things are displayed in the hallway, and they actually share with their parents what they've written about, what they've drawn about, what they've painted about, what all the aspects of the study. And it is very, very powerful, because when you see many, many products together, then it jogs their memory, and it makes sense, rather than sending something home kind of in isolation and somebody might not know, that was a Cherokee basket that we tried to weave in the same way, or that was, an up-close study of a pumpkin from a story that we read that had to do with, growing your own food or something like that. So it is very powerful, and students do have a tremendous sense of ownership and a sense of pride in what they're doing. And it's very tangible, and that's what really makes the difference for kids. They can really see it. And taking their writing, journaling is a great way to use gardening, because you're looking at a spot over time and you're writing about what changes you see. And as you're looking at that piece of writing, you have a choice of taking it to be a realistic story, or you could, make it something very, very imaginative, and children do that.
That's a good thing for, I'm just thinking of all these things I'm learning today that I want to start to do, even though I'm not in second or third grade anymore. So any comments, Carol, for our listeners? I know they can go to commonroots.org. If you'd like more information, you can go to commonroots.org. And one thing we didn't mention specifically were some of the values based on this mission, and I just want to mention some of those. I think they really make sense for a way of living wherever you are, which are to build community, to take responsibility, to support locals, and to leave a healthy footprint. And I think that we're so fortunate that we have Linda Waltine and Carol McQuillan looking out for us and being involved with Common Roots and trying to create this opportunity in our community.
I think one thing I would like to add is sometimes an individual parent or other community members might think that they don't know what they have to contribute. And sometimes it's really very, very simple in terms of creating this sense of place and stewardship to really go to your principal and figure out what are the committees and how can I be involved. I'll never forget the beautiful question that a principal asked me when I was a parent and I stayed home with my children for a time. And she said to me, "Well, what is it that you'd like to do? You want to be a volunteer at school beyond the PTO. What do you love to do?" And I think it was a really great question, and I was able to answer, "Well, I'd love to help children, you know, put on plays from their writing because I think drama is very, very powerful." The point being that sometimes we don't know where to begin when we want to contribute to our school community, and so I think around the topic and the concern of stewardship, it's really, really powerful for community members and parents and older students, college age, et cetera, to be asking, how can I be a contributing member to enhance the stewardship right where I live so that I enhance my own sense of place and build a stronger community for the future?
I can't think of a better way to end our show. Thank you so much. So that's it for this week. More information about Common Roots, go to commonroots.org. More information about Edible Communities, ediblecommunities.com. Thanks again to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch. And I'm Deborah Shapiro. I will be back with you on August 17th. Your host next week will be Kate Manchester from Edible Santa Fe. And then after that, Marla Camp will be hosting the next show. So I look forward to seeing you in about 3 weeks when we'll be talking about mastering the grill and getting the best from our locally harvested meat. Thanks again to Carol McQuillan and Linda Waltine and to all of you for listening. Until next time, enjoy.